The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the second hour of this Friday's show. It's 9 minutes past 10, is the 9 till noon show. And just to give you a reminder of how you get in contact with us and keep yourself involved in the conversation, WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000. You can send your WhatsApp voice notes to us on that number as well, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Let's look at some of those comments coming in so far this morning. So listening to Breed's response, am I to conclude that a solicitor's job can ignore right or wrong, good versus evil? Is something morally right or ethically right? Are God's laws totally out of the picture? But even going back to biblical times, I'm sure people were afforded a defence. What's the alternative? If anyone can propose an alternative, that everyone, for you, if you are wrongly accused, for you to receive a fair trial, even someone as unimaginable as it might be, who's clearly guilty, has to have that trial as well. Their defence, whether the solicitor believes it or not, has to be put through on their behalf, I would imagine. So why is it, you know, like, at what point are you saying that people shouldn't get a trial? And who decides the evidence? Obviously, there was very significant evidence. There was DNA evidence, CCT evidence. There was an early admission, which was retracted because he said he was on medication. What else was there? There was a great deal of evidence. So who would look over that evidence and go, you know what, no trial. We're not doing a trial here. How does that work? Because, you know, in this day and age, we're very quick to comment and sort of say, well, that's not fair, or we can't. Well, what's the alternative? Text us 086 60 25000. The lady saying two people in town on a scooter. This is happening in Letterkenny as well. I saw it, thought nothing of it. It's dangerous. It's just not happening in Roscommon here too. I've never seen it. I was a wee bit taken aback by that. A caller says, ask Greg to ask the legal lady, Breed. The case in America, Jason Corbett, it was mentioned his first wife didn't die of natural causes. She was strangled. I didn't see any medical representatives. Why were there no people from the post-mortem there to prove their case? Now, I didn't follow that intently, but I think there was a little bit of upset that was brought into the equation. And then all of a sudden there was criticism of the thoroughness of the post-mortem over here. I think that was all tied in defence, prosecution, etc. And as I say, there was a little bit of disquiet in relation to that. If found guilty, the guilty should pay their own legal fees, not the taxpayer, says the listener. Most politicians all love being politicians, so it's not really work for them. It's more of a vocation. So maybe their salaries ought to be all cut. I see what you did there. Hello, Greg. The answer to your question to solve the problem for teachers, nurses, etc. is we need houses, full stop. Until we have more houses built and plenty of them, we'll have the problem with people leaving this country. It is a root cause of an awful lot of problems, I think most people might agree. What about perks to attract competent politicians and cancel government officials from abroad to sort out this country's problems? Quite controversial when people are brought in from outside this country to senior positions within it. Greg, what about all cases in Donegal recently for domestic violence and physical assault of females and walk out of court because they pay the victim money? How is this justice? Not familiar with that story or what you might be referencing there. So just read your comment and leave it at that. Read the e-scooters. The amount of young people using these without helmets and out on the road but not abiding by the rules of the road. They also need to start paying some form of road tax. If they're using the road, they should be treated like car owners. Via email, hi Greg, we need to stop demonising men because of the actions of some. There are plenty of women out there who abuse men in this world too. We all have fathers, sons, brothers and nephews. We need to build our men up to be strong and confident and allow them to be men instead of constantly tramping them down and making them feel bad for being men. We might then see a decrease in mental health issues and suicides in men. I take your point, and I think most men, I hope most men listening, are confident enough in themselves that when we talk about other men that, and we know it's a minority of men, but when we talk about other men that physically assault women or murder them, that they're not talking about all men. Like, I know if a woman comes onto this program and discusses the actions of a man, I don't feel threatened by that. I know they're not talking about me. So, you know, maybe if men sort of, we did build ourselves up a little bit and then we realise that we're talking about a problem associated with some men, we might not feel so threatened by that conversation. Greg, foreigners who commit crime here should be deported after doing their time. Does this? I'll come back to that one in a second. There's a wee question mark on that. Let me see. Maybe people coming into the country should be vetted. It's not all violence, but the doors are wide open. People need to be vetted. If they have a criminal record, they shouldn't walk into the country. Their name should be given to the guards by the country that they came from. But often, as we know, they might land without documentation. So how can you vet someone without documentation? And someone probably will text him, well, then you don't let them in. But that's part of the wider debate, I suppose, on inward migration there. Bags are handed out in college like Maynooth, containing condoms and contraceptives, handing them out like lollipops, handing it out like to do whatever you want. Handing them out is sending a bad message. The colleges are sending out a very bad message, giving out these bags. Hand them out and off you go. Have as much sex as you want. Fresh as weak is dangerous. These things should be looked at. Okay, but what about the argument? Some might say that people are having sex anyway and you want to reduce unwanted pregnancies and the transmission of sexual disease. Maybe that's the way to do it. Right, Joe joins us on the programme now. Joe, thank you very much for your time today. How are you keeping? Not great, I would
imagine. Good morning, Greg. I'm keeping fine, yeah.
Okay.
And yourself?
I'm okay too, Joe. I was the victim of a scam not so long ago, actually, in the last week, but I'm more interested in what you have gone through, Joe, because this seems like a new one to me anyway.
Yeah, well, it's probably not as big as some of the issues that you're currently dealing with there.
That.
But in a nutshell, I was expecting a sum of money to be credited to myself and my wife's joint account. Mm-hmm. And I asked her last night just to check it on her iPhone, which I don't bother with that. I just do the laptop thing. But anyway, she said no. But she said, why are you sending this money to the Dundalk Credit Union?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any association with Dundalk in any way. So it transpires, after spending an hour on the phone this morning with the headquarters in Dublin, that somebody was able to set up a direct debit to our joint account without us knowing it.
Wow.
And the name of the person was given, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
And I just, if people could be made aware of, you know, to check their statements and even check online, you know, all the transactions that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And because it could happen and you know, if people are busy, they don't check. It was for €350.
Yes.
But any money that goes out to your account without... And the bank said they, this is the first time they heard of this
mm-hmm.
happening. So
mm-hmm.
that's quite worrying.
Yeah.
So they're looking into it. But so, could you give me any information?
And were you able to go back through your accounts to see if it was just the 350 or was more money taken, Joe? Or
no,
are you
no,
in it, that it, process it, now?
We were quite lucky that we checked it last night because it was only set up at the end of October, and the first payment went out on the 1st of November. So it was nipped in the bud, as it were.
Mm.
Whereas if we hadn't checked, which you don't generally do much, it could have went on for months, you know what I mean?
Oh, for sure, of course, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And if it saved one person from being scammed, I mean, that was 350, but it could be much more.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, these scammers can take out small amounts.
Yep.
And you don't notice it. You think, well, that must have spent that in some shops. Tapped the card here, tapped it there.
You can't be careful enough. And did you get sort of any indication as if the money's going to be returned to? It's quite interesting because there's another party mentioned. And maybe, Joe, if you can get back to us, like, is it possible they can't have had very close details to you and the mistake was made like that? That seems incredibly unlikely. But it'll be really interesting, Joe, to find out how this turns out for you as to how.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
And I told them I need to know.
Yeah.
And for them to keep me updated, because there's something wrong with their system if somebody can just set up any willy-nilly
for sure
a direct debit into their own account.
Yep, there needs to be signatures or whatever. You'd imagine there has to be more checks and balances. Okay, brilliant stuff, Joe. It's good advice. Check your outgoings and your incomings, particularly your outgoings, and if there's anything unusual, flag it as early as possible. And let us know, Joe, the outcome of that, if you don't mind. I think you will.
I'll let you know, but the thing was, I had a very large direct debit going out. I have only one direct debit on the account going out on the 15th.
Uh-huh.
And had I missed that, I would have been penalised because I wouldn't have had enough money in.
Excellent, excellent. Good point. Good point, Joe. Thank you for that. Best wishes. Yep.
Yeah, okay. I'll let you know how it pans
Please
out.
Please do. Okay, Joe, thank you very much indeed. And in my case, it was... maybe I didn't mention this earlier in the week, I can't recall, but I was on the phone app running through, you can switch this to the ins and outs, and I noticed that there was on Sunday, last Sunday, €94.85 or something had been taken out of my card for Shein, which is a very popular website, of course, for people to do online shopping. But it said that the, firstly, I made sure that no one close to me had done it. Not done it, but you know what I mean, that it used the card. It wouldn't be an issue, but you know yourself, just to be sure. And then I also noticed that it said it was from Singapore, which was very unusual, that that's where the point of purchase had been. So I got onto the bank straight away, and in fairness, they refunded the €94. I don't know how they got the details. I'm really careful with cards. The card is never really inputted anywhere it shouldn't be, and it's always in my wallet. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know how they happened to get the my card in Singapore, but in fairness to the bank, they refunded the money. But then you have to go and change the card, and then there's recurring payments on that card, and it's a nightmare. But anyway, I think I did briefly mention it early in the week. Just backing Joe up there, check your outgoings, particularly in the bank, if anything looks strange. Okay, let's stay on the issue of potential scams. It's to try and make sure that none of you get caught out. And to help us, the owner of DPD Donegal, Mary Ford, joins us. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Greg. How are you today?
I am good. I'm good. Right. There's a scam text doing the rounds you want to warn people about. Talk to us about it, Mary.
There certainly is. There's a scam going about there this last week odds, and it's on, and it's very, very legitimate to anybody that can see it, because there's on it, follow my package, and where you're unable to deliver your package, and then they request money to rearrange delivery. Now, that does not happen with DPD or any of the couriers, as far as I'm aware, that none of them that your delivery will be done. But it is a scam that's going about, and just let the listeners know that that's, it's out there at the minute. Now, we are getting several calls about it. Most people have the sense to ring us up first to inquire that it is a scam.
Mm-hmm.
But again, at the minute, there's so many people waiting on packages
exactly,
this time of the year.
Yep. I have a text here that I got yesterday. Your parcel, JH97397-5329, is due for delivery. Please pay your custom charge online via onpost-parcels.com. They're getting clever with the URLs too, aren't they? Because it doesn't, you know how back in the day it was really obvious by the address. So this is the same type of scam. It's using a
same type
it's
of
using
one.
A custom
and
scam.
I have one here that I got into with an 087 phone number on it and DPD with four digits on it, and then your parcel could not be delivered. Action needed. And again, it goes into a URL number as well, then to put it into the system. So again, all of those things are all scams.
And if they send that to 1,000 people and 10 of them are waiting on a parcel or a delivery, Mary, they're in the money because they don't look for to share €6 billion of a lotto with you, or they're not looking for €780. They're looking for €239. No. You know,
€239 or €1.20 or whatever.
But as soon as they get the details, they can clean your account out. Okay. So
absolutely,
just to recap then, Mary, so in terms of DPD, you can only really speak for them. You will never send a text out with a link saying rearrange delivery at such a cost or whatever, what have you.
Absolutely not. We do not do that. You will get your 1 hour window if you have a delivery coming, and it will name a driver. And then again, if you're not at home, you can, but you get the opportunity to do that whenever you get your first text message to say a driver will be out between such and such a time. And after that, then, if you rearrange it yourself, then there is definitely no costs involved, absolutely none.
Mary, listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it greatly for helping
spread
the word there.
No bother at all, Greg. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Mary Ford there, who I felt like I was speaking over, and Joe as well. My apologies if I am. I had very little sleep last night because the young fella, must be a wee bug going around, but he was up and down like a yo-yo. And then the technical issues at the start of the programme. It's been one of those Fridays, but if I do appear to be speaking over my guests, my apologies. It just seems to be coming across like that a little bit. Right, keep your calls and comments coming in to us, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. We'll be back after these. Now, we're joined on the programme by John Dixon, who's backing a campaign by the National Charity for Deaf and Hard of Hearing People, CHIME, to ensure the Department of Health develops what it says is an urgently needed national hearing care plan. John, good morning to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you for having me.
John, when did your hearing begin to deteriorate?
In my 40s, I started out as my hearing was starting to get worse, but coming close to the end of the 40s, I knew it was bad because it just progressively getting worse all the time. So towards the end of my 40s, my hearing was pretty bad.
And what caused it? Was there a cause for the hearing loss, or was it an inverted commas natural hearing loss?
No, I've been involved playing music all my life since I was about 19. And you know, when you're playing music, you tend to be exposed to very high volumes. And I attribute that to my hearing loss.
And, I mean, it wasn't just the hearing loss in and of itself. It did have a really significant impact on your greater well-being, John.
Absolutely. When you start to lose your hearing and you're in company, or even at home, you're at home, you have the television too high, you have the radio too high, everything, it's uncomfortable for everyone else. And then if you're out in company in a bar and you can't hear people, what people are talking about, you're just hearing mumble. So you're inclined to withdraw yourself from the company, and you're missing out. Like you'd sit there watching people smiling and having fun, and you don't know what they're smiling or having fun about simply because you can't hear properly.
Did you find yourself sort of adapting to kind of bluff it a little bit at any stage?
What really happened is you're going to just withdraw it into yourself, because it becomes embarrassing after a while. If you're in company and you have to keep asking people to repeat themselves, it's annoying for them. It's also annoying for you. And sometimes it can get a little bit embarrassing. You know, you can often be the blunt of the joke, but that's not so bad. That's not the bad part of it. It's just all the time you're thinking you're a burden on somebody else, you know, when you're trying to speak to them and you can't understand what they're saying, you know.
Yeah, and often, you know, when things are uncomfortable out and about, we retire to the sanctuary of our home, our safe place. And as you've already outlined, you know, you have to have the TV loud or the radio loud, or asking people to repeat themselves in that environment. It kind of, that's your safe space, and yet it's still also a big issue, John, and as I say, leads to that sort of sense of isolation and depression in your case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what happens. You kind of withdraw yourself from the company, you go into yourself, you don't know what's happening. And as a result, it has a detrimental effect on your well-being. You can feel yourself going down as a result of, you know, of being totally isolated. And people don't need to isolate you. You actually isolate yourself because it's just too much of a burden, hearing loss. And unless you've been through hearing loss, you really don't know all the effects that go with it, you know.
Listen, I think lots of people have had people in their life who've lost hearing, and you know, obviously then the solution is hearing aids. But like I know from people I've known, that the that even being able to hear what the hearing aids allow you to hear, they ended up preferring not to use them because it was almost more annoying the way the sound was delivered than not being able to hear at all. What was your experience initially, at least, with hearing aids, John?
Well, initially I went and I got a set of hearing aids and I got these hearing aids that you just fit into the lobe of your ear, and I only had them about 2 weeks, but I just couldn't use them because all they were essentially were two small amplifiers, and what was happening was it amplified everything, but that's where the problem lies. When it amplifies everything, you can understand nothing because it just everything just comes through as a noise, and I found them of no benefit at all. All it was prolonging the annoyance and making it worse. So I stopped after about 2 weeks, even though I had gone through, they were quite expensive at the time. I decided I've had enough of them, I'm not using them anymore.
Yeah.
And I cast them aside, you know.
Are you not told that it takes the brain a little while before it sort of figures out what's going on and filters certain noises out and lets other noises through? I seem to recall someone being told that. Were you told that, or you just couldn't handle it after the 2 weeks, or what's the story, John?
Yeah, people were trying to say to me, you know, give it a chance. But, you know, you're using your ears maybe 16, 18 hours a day. And if you were annoying yourself for 16 or 18 hours a day, the day is pretty long if it's annoying you, you know. So after 2 weeks, I decided, no, I'm not using them. The hearing aids don't work. That's what I said to myself. Now, the situation just went on and on, and my wife and my daughter could understand and could see what was happening with me. They could see that I was starting to go into myself and that I was getting depressed. So my wife got in touch with the Deaf Village in Cabra here in Dublin, and they put us in touch with Chime. And my wife and my daughter made an appointment for me to go and visit an audiologist in Chime. So I went to Chime and they gave me a hearing test, a very, very intense hearing test. And it transpired that my hearing, on a graphic, the base end of my hearing wasn't so bad, but from the mid-range to the high-range frequencies was completely gone. So what they do then is they design your hearing aids to replace the frequencies that are missing from your hearing.
Wow.
So as a result, then, when you get your hearing aids, it's like giving you back your hearing, because all the frequencies have returned, and it's not just amplifying it; it's replacing the frequencies that were missing.
Yeah, and you're not getting a double hit. You're not getting a double hit or a triple hit of the low tones as well, because you're able to hear them. Okay, it's able to concentrate on the areas that you do need the amplification in. Then your hearing balances, presumably, John. Yeah.
That's it. You see, the hearing aids they designed for you only replace the frequencies that are missing from your hearing. So as a result, what happens is they just balance off your hearing. So the sounds that you're hearing then are the sounds that you should normally be hearing with good hearing, you know.
Now, obviously, as you mentioned, the ones you got in 2015 that lasted 2 weeks, they are effectively, they take in a noise and they blast it down your ear canal with the hope that you're able to function that way. And you mentioned they weren't cheap. So in terms of what sounds like more technical devices provided by Chime, were they incredibly expensive, or are they incredibly expensive, or are they generally available?
No, they are expensive. They cost me €4,000.
Mm-hmm.
They cost me four, but it's like everything else. Like as was said to me, you'd spend €4,000 taking a holiday to the sun, you know, and replacing your hearing and bringing your hearing back for €4,000 for me was very, very good value. I know it sounds expensive, but if you could and understand that Chime are not there to sell you expensive hearing aids. They'll do the hearing test on you. They will allow you to pick what is within your range, and they'll do their very best to give you as good a hearing as they can for the price range you can afford.
Yeah, I mean, look, people spend thousands on on, well, cosmetic surgery, that's different altogether, but hip replacement, knee replacement. I mean, for on the face of it, I suppose, to have an incredibly important sense returned to you, it probably represents good value for money, but that all depends, I suppose, on your access to money as well. So, you know, you were a happy-go-lucky, you know, big part of the crowd when your hearing was as it was. We've talked about you sort of slipping into a depression and withdrawing from life to a great extent. How long after you got these hearing aids from Chime did you return to yourself? And, you know, did it take time to get used to them, or was it a light bulb moment, John?
It was a light bulb moment, because I tell you, when I came out of Chime with the hearing aids and I got into my car, the first thing I noticed was the indicators. I never even noticed that my indicators went tick tock, tick tock.
Brilliant.
So that was the first very noticeable thing I couldn't believe. And then over a matter of days, like, you settle into using these things pretty quick, and you're like a child with a toy on Christmas Day when you realise that your hearing is almost 100% normal. You know, to me, it definitely was. It was a real change to my well-being.
Brilliant.
And yeah, you know, you find yourself back in company, you find yourself back having the fun. And I'm not saying overnight you were back to yourself, but certainly it did improve my well-being, you know.
Yeah, and I presume it's like someone coming out of being incarcerated. It takes a while to get back to life as you knew it, because, you know, you're so withdrawn from it for so long. Now, we started off the conversation and you're sharing your story because of the work you've done, your interaction with Chime, and to back their calls on the Department of Health for an urgently needed national hearing care plan. What does that look like, John?
Well, all I do is tell my story to try and support what Chime are doing. Chime are putting the pressure on the government to try and subsidise and to try and help people, because in the long run, this is profit making for the government. Because if people are going into depression, there are lots and lots of other problems that come from it, and attributing hearing loss to well-being is something that people don't necessarily do. But I can tell you that with my hearing loss, it did bring my depression on.
Yeah.
And if you can alleviate people getting depression, they will save money as a result of that down the road. You know, so they should really be, instead of reacting, they should be proactive. They should be giving people assistance to buy these hearing aids to prevent them from getting into such a state of depression and feeling bad about themselves.
And John, you would know, and I would know from experience as well, it's not just you, it's the people around you as well, because they lose you to some extent. I mean, for a period of time, I don't think I'm being dramatic, and I don't know, but I presume that your wife and daughter felt they'd lost you to some extent, and they're having to live with you and the frustrations and the communication issues. And it's not just you, it's tough for, I presume, John, and apologies for presuming, but you can correct me if I'm wrong.
But you're presuming dead right, Greg. You're completely right. It's not just you. It's everybody that's around you. Like, hearing loss is something that people notice in somebody. And like, my wife and my daughter, they could see how effective it was on my well-being. And it was worrying for them. So much so, as I said, hearing aids don't work for me. I'm not trying them. I've spent money on them. They didn't work, all this. And I was kicking the can down the road. But my wife and my daughter realised, you know, this is an issue and this is what's behind it. So it was them who investigated, them who researched the whole thing for me and put everything in place, even as far as making the appointments and insisting that I go to them, because they could see the detrimental effect it was having on me. And there are so many people out there who are not associating with the way they're feeling with hearing loss. And if it is with hearing loss, there's a cure to it, you know.
Yeah.
And getting your hearing back, definitely, it's like taking medicine. it definitely does help your well-being.
And I wonder, John, do you allow yourself to imagine if you hadn't engaged with Chime? Because there's probably a lot of people listening that went down your road as far as getting the hearing aids and the just the basic amplification driving them nuts. Now, that's not to say that's everybody's experience. You know, and they didn't go as far as you did, that they didn't have someone that made those appointments to Chime. Do you know what I mean? Do you ever allow yourself to imagine what your life might be like now if you hadn't had that intervention?
Well, I know I certainly wouldn't be the person I am this morning, because I was in a pretty low place at the time, and took others to kind of understand and to know what was causing this. And there are so many people out there who this morning are feeling low on themselves, feeling a little bit depressed, feeling like, you know, this, there has to be more to life than this, and, you know, there's no fun in life, no nothing. And as it says, the cure is out there. It's like taking really good medication. The cure is out there, and it's almost instantaneous. Like, I'm not saying you get back 100% of the way you used to be in company and all, but you certainly start to enjoy life more, and you certainly start to feel a lot better about yourself.
I'm delighted to be able to speak to you, John, in the space that you are in your life. It's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Greg. And my little message is if you've bad hearing, go and investigate it. Go and try and get the help, because it is life-changing.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me.
People mask it for years. They do. I know people do mask it. All right. God bless you, John. Take care. On the line with me now is Orla McBride, a Brian Friel Trust member. Good morning to you, Orla. Thank you so much for joining us.
Not at all. Thank you for having me, Greg.
No, it's good to have you with us. Right, a new Brian Friel Centre is being planned in Glenties. A fundraising campaign has been launched to progress the project. A GoFundMe page is live. We'll tell you about that now if you wish to help support this project. Orla, for those who may not be aware, and I'm sure most are, why would it be so fitting for a Brian Friel Centre to be located in Glenties?
Well, I guess, Greg, Brian Friel is probably one of the most well-established, well-known of our Irish dramatists. Some people would say that he was likened to the Irish Chekhov, so he is seen in that kind of global context as being a giant of the stage. His works were performed everywhere from Broadway to the West End, from the Abbey Theatre to Glenties to Aghrenon and Letterkenny. He really is and was one of the finest playwrights of the 20th century and into the 21st century. And his plays continue to this day. As we speak, Sean McGinley from Ballyshannon is performing in the Irish Repertory translations in New York. So his work continues to compel, because the one thing about Brian Friel, he was very much of the Northwest. He was very much from he was born in Omagh and then was brought up in Derry. But Donegal is where his heart was. His mother was from Glenties. And Glenties, or Ballybeg, as it was fictionalised in his writing, was really that imaginative pull for Brian Friel. So Donegal is hugely significant in his work. And anyone who knows his work knows Ballybeg. And for that reason, really, no more than when we think about Seamus Heaney and how well-regarded he is and how celebrated he is as a poet in Northern Ireland. And we have the Seamus Heaney Centre at Queen's. We have the magnificent Seamus Heaney Centre at Ballaghy, in the school where he went to in County Tyrone. Then it's really, really important that Donegal and the northwest of Ireland actually celebrate one of the finest playwrights of the 20th and 21st century, and that was Brian Friel. And it absolutely makes sense that acknowledgement of his magnitude as a playwright takes place in Glenties, which was, as I said, the Ballybeg of his imagination.
With the full backing of the Friel family as well, which is really important.
It is really important. I mean, his widow Anne is hugely, hugely involved and continues to be involved. She was down in Glenties during the summer, looking at the courthouse, which will be the main anchor for the centre. But obviously, we've also acquired the Brian Freel's mother's home, which is out the road, the kind of the, as you're going towards Letterkenny, and that home was really people who know Dancing at Luna's, people who might be familiar with the film and with Meryl Streep. That is the cottage, that is the home. So we've also acquired that. So Anne is hugely supportive of it. And Brian's daughter, Mary Freel Bateman, is actually a member of the trust also. So it has the full backing of the Freel family, which is really important for us. And actually, Anne has been very kind in donating Brian's private library to the centre when it opens, which in itself is a huge coup for the trust and for Glenties.
Yeah, and so many pieces of the jigsaw are in place. The last piece really is the financing of this, because to have access to that material, to have the obviously the importance of Glenties to Brian Freel and the backing of the Freel family, as I say, all the parts are pretty much there. It's a case of putting them together.
That's it, yeah. And what we've done now is we've launched this GoFundMe page, which is about the next phase. We say that we've completed phase one, which was buying the cottage and doing remedial works to it, and then acquiring, with the help of Donegal County Council and a lease arrangement, the courthouse in Glenties. And people might be familiar with the courthouse beside St Connell's Museum. And the next piece really now is to, and we've also completed a feasibility study, so we know how much it will cost and what it will look like. And we've been working with architects John McLaughlin and CHNL Consulting. So we have the plans are ready. We're ready to go. And phase two now is about bringing in expertise to support us in the fundraising piece. It may sound like a lot of money, but it's actually not. It's only 5 million that we're looking at to develop the courthouse as the centre for the Brian Freel Centre. It's a hugely ambitious project, but really very realistic. And from our perspective, it's as much about Brian Freel. It's incredible, you know, it's about Brian Freel, and Brian is at the centre of it, and his work and his life are at the centre of it. But it's also really important for South West Donegal. It's very important for Glenties. It's very important for the local economy. We're along the Wild Atlantic Way. So it is another piece of the yes. of the tourism offer and the cultural offer for people who are coming to this part of Donegal.
Does it frustrate you at all, as it seems to a few people texting in, that you're having to go to through this process and having to seek public to seek funds from the public or contributions, which I think is nice because they'll have a fingerprint on all of this for generations to come. But that perhaps maybe something of this importance, the state should be stepping in, because 5 million to the public coffers is actually nothing.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I suppose it's a balance between the two, Greg. We want people to feel ownership. We know how loved Brian was, how well regarded he was as an individual, but also how hugely important his work was and it continues to be. So we want people to feel that they have a part of it. But yes, no, absolutely. You know, we will be looking for public monies and support on a north-south basis to enable this to happen, because it is something that needs to happen and should happen. Brian will be 10 years dead in October 2025. Oh, wow. And we want to have this opened by October 2025.
And sometimes we have to do things ourselves. We just have to, you know, grab an issue or something by the scruff of the neck and progress with it. Okay, Orla, if people want to have a contribution here and to assist, how do they do so? How do they find the links and the information and the GoFundMe?
Yeah, so it's all available on GoFundMe, which is the initiative that we're using to actually get the monies initially. So it's GoFundMe.com. But also, if any individual wants to make contact with any of us directly, they can, and maybe they would contact Highland Radio. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that have significant amounts of money that might be able to support us, and they can do so by contacting Highland Radio privately, and then you have our numbers. So there are two ways. One is GoFundMe.com, and then the other way is if people want to make individual pledges on a more anonymous basis, to contact us.
No problem, and we'll facilitate that. Of course we will. Orla, thank you so much for your time. Have a lovely day. Have a lovely weekend, in fact. That's Orla McBride, Brian Freel Trust member. All right, okay. Going to take a break ahead of the news at 11.